Hi, I'm Amy Goodman. In this critical election year, you count on Democracy Now! To stay focused on the stories that matter most. And we count on you to support our independent journalism. If everyone who tunes into Democracy Now! Signed up for a monthly donation of, say, just $6, we could cover our operating costs for the entire year. Really, that's all it would take. Please do your part today by visiting us at democracynow.org. Stay safe. Wear a mask, save lives, and thank you so much. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
What do you want to call them? Give me a name. Give me a
white
name.
Supremacists and right
like me to condemn?
White supremacists and right
Proud Boys, stand back and stand by.
Stand back and stand by. President Trump refuses to condemn white supremacists during a chaotic first debate with Joe Biden. The president repeatedly heckled, interrupted, and insulted the former vice president as they sparred on the pandemic, right-wing violence, climate change, voting by mail, the Supreme Court, taxes, and more.
People out there need help.
But why didn't you do it over the last 25 years?
Because you weren't president. Because you weren't president screwing things up.
You were a senator.
You're the worst president America has ever had.
Hey, Joe, let me just tell you, Joe. I've done more in 47 months. I've done more than you've done in 47 years, Joe.
We'll air excerpts of the debate and get response. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden met in Cleveland, Ohio, Tuesday for the first of three scheduled presidential debates. It was a night filled with chaos and insults as Trump repeatedly mocked and interrupted Biden, who responded by calling Trump a clown and the worst president the nation has ever had. During one exchange, Trump refused to condemn white supremacists after being questioned by debate moderator Chris Wallace of Fox News.
What do you want to call them? Give me a name. Give me a
white
name.
White supremacists and right
like me to condemn?
White supremacists and right
Proud Boys, stand back and stand by. But I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. Somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because this is not a right-wing problem. This is a left-wing problem.
Even after Trump said these words, the Proud Boys posted a new version of their logo with Trump's quote, "Stand back and stand by." The Southern Poverty Law Center describes the Proud Boys as a hate group whose leaders regularly spout white nationalist memes and maintain affiliations with known extremists. During Tuesday's debate, President Trump refused to tell his supporters not to engage in violence after the election. Trump also made false or misleading statements about climate change, the coronavirus, pandemic, cases of election fraud, prescription drug prices, manufacturing jobs, Trump's political endorsements, and more. After headlines, we'll air excerpts of the debate and get response from around the country. The United States recorded 43,000 new coronavirus cases and over 900 deaths Tuesday as public health experts warned of a new wave of infections. In Florida, officials in Miami-Dade County say they won't fully comply with Republican Governor Ron DeSantis's order allowing bars, restaurants, and other businesses to reopen at unlimited capacity. The NFL said Tuesday it will suspend in-person practices for the Tennessee Titans and Minnesota Vikings after three Titans players and five staff members tested positive for coronavirus. Here in New York City, officials said Tuesday they'll begin fining people who refuse to wear masks in public after New York's coronavirus test positivity rate climbed above 3% for the first time in months. A new study by the United Hospital Fund finds about 4,200 children in New York lost at least one parent to COVID-19 this year, more New Yorkers than died in the September 11th attacks. Meanwhile, the American Academy of Pediatrics warned Tuesday coronavirus cases among children have soared since schools around the country reopened to in-person classes this fall. Children of all ages now comprise 10% of all U.S. coronavirus cases, compared to just 2% last April. India reported more than 80,000 new coronavirus cases over the last 24 hours, with the official death toll rapidly approaching 100,000. India's lead pandemic agency said Tuesday an antibody study suggests more than 60 million people nationwide have already been infected with coronavirus, 10 times the official count, but still a small fraction of India's population of 1.3 billion. India is second to the United States as the country with the most reported cases of COVID-19. This comes as the World Bank warns the pandemic has led to a rise in poverty in East Asian and Pacific nations for the first time in two decades, with as many as 38 million additional people set to fall below the poverty line this year. On Capitol Hill, House Democrats have introduced a slimmed-down coronavirus stimulus bill in a last-ditch effort to get Senate Republicans to agree to another round of relief ahead of the November election. The $2.2 trillion aid package would restore $600 a week enhanced unemployment benefits and send another round of $1,200 stimulus checks to most U.S. taxpayers. It would also provide funding for small business loans, housing subsidies, election protection, aid to school districts and the U.S. Postal Service, and money for coronavirus testing and tracing. Senate Republican Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has repeatedly refused to take up the $3.4 trillion HEROES Act passed by House Democrats more than 4 months ago. A warning to our audience, the following story contains graphic images of police violence. In Texas, a county sheriff and local prosecutor have been indicted on felony charges of evidence tampering related to the police killing of Javier Ambler, an African-American man who was tasered to death during a traffic stop March of 2019 as he told officers, "I have congestive heart failure and I can't breathe." Ambler's death was recorded by the former reality TV show Live PD, but the footage was never publicly released. On Monday, a Williamson County grand jury indicted Sheriff Robert Chody and former county attorney Jason Nasur on charges they intentionally destroyed or concealed recordings of the killing. Both men face up to 10 years in prison if convicted. In Kentucky, Republican Attorney General Daniel Cameron said Tuesday he never asked a grand jury to consider homicide charges for the three police officers who shot into the home of 26-year-old African-American Louisville resident Breonna Taylor last March, killing her. Cameron was speaking with a Louisville TV station about the three white plainclothes officers who burst into Taylor's home as they served a no-knock warrant in March: Miles Cosgrove, Jonathan Mattingly, and Brett Hankison.
Well, basically, your question is about whether we recommended any murder charges against Cosgrove and Mattingly, and the answer is no. Ultimately, our judgment is that the charge that we could prove at trial beyond a reasonable doubt was for wanton endangerment against Mr. Hankinson.
Kentucky Attorney General Cameron is due to release recordings from grand jury proceedings in Breonna Taylor's killing today, following a judge's order they be made public. In immigration news, The Washington Post reports the Trump administration's planning mass raids in pro-immigrant sanctuary cities across the United States. Immigration and Customs Enforcement could begin the operation in California as soon as this week and expand to other cities, including Denver and Philadelphia. Trump has repeatedly threatened to cut off federal funding to sanctuary cities if they don't comply with his immigration policies. In more immigration news, firsthand accounts continue to emerge of women who were seen by Dr. Mahendra Amin, the physician accused of performing forced sterilizations at the privately run Irwin Detention Center in Georgia. The New York Times interviewed 16 women who say they were treated by Amin, including women who had undergone invasive gynecological surgeries that were likely medically unnecessary. The Times reports Amin consistently overstated the risk of cysts or mass on the patient's reproductive organs and lied about the symptoms some women experienced to justify aggressive surgeries. At least one attorney had complained to Irwin's warden as far back as 2018 after a woman came forward with concerns about recent gynecological care she'd received while imprisoned at Irwin. In related news, BuzzFeed reports the Trump administration's dropped its years-long fight to block pregnant, undocumented teenagers in government custody from obtaining abortions. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, over 50 women are accusing workers with the World Health Organization and other international aid groups of sexual exploitation and abuse during efforts to fight Ebola between 2018 and 2020. In a new report by the New Humanitarian and the Thomson Reuters Foundation, the women detail multiple incidents of sexual violence, including allegedly being forced into having sex with aid workers in exchange for jobs. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called for an investigation. In India, Amnesty International has been forced to shutter operations and lay off all staff after the Indian government froze its bank accounts following two reports published by Amnesty this month, critical of the country's human rights violations. Amnesty staff say there's an incessant witch hunt of human rights groups by Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Hindu nationalist government. This is David Griffiths, director of the Office of the Secretary General at Amnesty International.
They're simply seeking to silence those who criticize them, those who call out human rights abuses in the country. We've seen a steadily intensifying series of attacks for several years. That is certain.
And in Mexico, authorities are bringing criminal charges against military soldiers for the first time in the ongoing investigation into the 2014 disappearance and likely massacre of 43 students from a teacher's college in Ayotzinapa, Guerrero. Mexican authorities announced Tuesday they've issued at least 25 arrest warrants against suspects believed to be the, quote, material and intellectual authors of the disappearance, including a former head of the federal police. Families of the disappeared students have long maintained the military was involved in the mass abduction. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York City, joined by my co-host Juan Gonzalez in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden met in Cleveland Tuesday for the first of three scheduled presidential debates. It was a night filled with chaos and insults as Trump repeatedly mocked and interrupted Biden, who responded by calling Trump a clown and the worst president the nation has ever had. Trump refused to condemn white supremacists after being questioned by debate moderator Chris Wallace of Fox News.
Are you willing tonight to condemn white supremacists and militia groups and to say that they need to stand down and not add to the violence in a number of these cities, as we saw in Kenosha and as we've seen in Portland?
Sure,
are you
I'm
prepared
willing to
specifically
do, that,
do it?
Well,
I would say almost everything I see is from the left wing, not from the right wing.
So what are you saying?
I'm willing to do anything. I want to see peace.
Then do it, sir.
Say it.
Do you want to call them? What do you want to call them? Give me a name.
White supremacists and
right like me to condemn?
White supremacists and right
Proud Boys.
Militia.
Stand back and stand by. But I'll tell you what. Somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because this is not a right-wing problem. This is a
FBI director.
This is a left-wing problem.
White supremacists. Antifa's an idea, not an organization.
Oh, you got it.
Not
militia.
That's what FBI director said.
Well, then you know what?
No, we're done.
Soon after President Trump said these words, the Proud Boys posted a new version of their logo, including Trump's, quote, stand back and stand by. The Southern Poverty Law Center describes the Proud Boys as a hate group whose leaders regularly spout white nationalist memes and maintain affiliations with known extremists. After the debate, Proud Boys organizer Joe Biggs wrote, quote, President Trump told the Proud Boys to stand by because someone needs to deal with Antifa. Well, sir, we're ready, he said. One recent study from July found right-wing extremists have killed 329 people in the United States in the past 25 years. We begin today's show with two guests, Christian Piccolini, a former neo-Nazi who leads the Free Radicals Project, a global extremism prevention and disengagement network. His most recent book, Breaking Hate, Confronting the New Culture of Extremism. We're also joined by Mark Lamont Hill, professor of media studies and urban education at Temple University. We're going to start with Christian Piccolini. Stand back and stand by. Can you talk about President Trump's message to the Proud Boys and what exactly it means, you as a former white supremacist skinhead?
Well, Amy, it's very crystal clear to me what President Trump was calling for last night. And it's, I think, crystal clear to the Proud Boys what he was asking for. And that was for continued pressure, continued violence against what he is calling the threat of the left. And in reality, there is no threat from the left, because if we look historically, you know, just over the last 25 years and the number that you've quoted, far-right extremists, everything from neo-Nazis to white supremacists to white nationalists, are responsible for nearly 100% of the violence, 100% of the death, and 100% of the fear and rhetoric and propaganda that is inducing this type of violence. So he was completely wrong, but it was a clear-cut call to a violent white supremacist group that they must stay vigilant. If I were a Proud Boy, which essentially is version 2.0 of a neo-Nazi skinhead, I would see that as a call to arms, specifically against, you know, anti-fascist groups and protesters like Antifa and Black Lives Matters.
And Mark Lamont Hill, I'm wondering your reaction to the president's comments, especially in the light of the almost not only chaotic, but a preview of what kind of authoritarianism there will be in future debates, in political debates between candidates that the president set here. Do you think that the progressive movement in America is estimating how quickly we are careening toward fascism and authoritarianism in this country?
Well, after the last 3 years, 3.5 years, we shouldn't be underestimating it. The evidence is there, whether it's public policy, whether it's the president's statements, whether it's his commitment to making these both sides arguments when it comes to white supremacy, when it comes to the debates. Even corporate media in the last 24 hours has framed this debate as both sides were uncivil, both sides were disrespectful, when in fact it's one side doing this type of this violence and the other side sort of responding to it however they do. And so when it comes to the president's refusal to denounce white supremacy, we should not be surprised. There have been other white supremacist presidents who have attempted to cloak, and politicians more broadly, who have attempted to cloak their white supremacy. Trump had an alley-oop. He had the opportunity to say, I denounce white supremacy, and then continue to do the white supremacist project that he's been doing. But instead, he wouldn't do it. When he says, Proud Boys, stand back and stand by, these were prepared remarks. This wasn't Trump on the cuff. This was actually one of the things that he was prepared to say. He went into the debate understanding that that kind of rhetoric and that kind of wink does an extraordinary amount of political work for his base. Trump is not trying to widen his base. He's trying to create the chaos that you just mentioned. He wants chaos in the streets. He wants violence in the streets. He wants chaos at the polls because he wants Americans to feel a sense of unsafety. It's its own kind of diplomatic terrorism.
Christian Piccolini, what should we understand about the white supremacist movement? We can't underestimate what happened last night. It wasn't so much Joe Biden. It was Chris Wallace of Fox News who said, will you condemn white supremacists? President Trump refused. What does this mean? And what does it mean to you, too, as a former white supremacist skinhead, what this means, not only the Proud Boys and who they are, but to the white supremacist movement in this country?
You know, having been somebody who was there many, many years ago and knows how they're taking this, they're seeing this as a vote of confidence. They're seeing it as a call of action, very clear-cut call to action. You know, they're feeling as though their guy is in the White House and that they can't do any wrong, that they've become emboldened and empowered to take to the streets, to carry weapons, to intimidate people, to really ramp up their rhetoric and their violence. And last night was not a wink and a nod. It was a clear bullhorn, very clear bullhorn to white supremacists that they have space to act. And, you know, I think what was even more disturbing or equally disturbing was the fact that he called for, you know, vigilantism at the polls, that he asked for poll watchers to keep an eye on people who were voting. And that, you know, to me, again, was also a call for white supremacists and militia members and Boogaloo Boys and anybody who else who falls under this white supremacist umbrella to really start to act out on what they've been talking about and to be violent against the left and to intimidate them to not show up and vote, which is exactly what we need to do, is we need to show up and vote, unless this is the kind of America and this is the kind of president you want.
Well, Christian, you mentioned the issue of calling people to be, in essence, vigilantes at the polls. I recall clearly back in 1993, in a mayoral election in New York City, when Rudy Giuliani was attempting to unseat David Dinkins, who was the first African-American mayor in the city. And there were literally hundreds of off-duty police officers and off-duty correction officers who Giuliani mobilized to go into the Black and Latino neighborhoods of New York to intimidate the voters. And I remember the night of the election asking the campaign manager of David Dinkins, Bill Lynch, I said, Bill, why aren't you protesting this? We're getting all these reports. And it was a very close election, but Lynch and the Democratic machinery at that time basically accepted the results, even though they knew that there was massive intimidation occurring. I'm wondering, do you, as we move closer to the election, I see this of potential being, in essence, publicly encouraged by the president to have this on a nationwide scale.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's exactly what the president was calling for. And I would urge people not to be intimidated by that, to vote by mail, to vote early if they can, because we don't know what type of trouble we're going to be seeing on Election Day. But despite that, we still need to vote, unless this is the kind of America we want to live in for the next 4 years and potentially, you know, see our democracy completely destroyed. So, again, we can't be intimidated. This is not what, you know, this is not part of our American DNA, is to be intimidated by terrorists, to be intimidated by white supremacists. We are progressive. We move past this. And in order to do that, we have to come together, and we can't be intimidated by these people.
Well, Christian Piccolini, we want to thank you for being with us of the Free Radicals Project. I should just add this news. Fred Perry has announced, it's a British brand, that it will stop selling one of its iconic polo shirts, the black and yellow polo shirt, to Canada and North America after it was adopted as the unofficial uniform of Proud Boys. Christian Piccolini, thanks for being with us. And Mark Lamont Hill, we'd like to ask you to stay with us, of Temple University, as we continue to talk about issues of race, the climate crisis, and voting. Stay with us.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend. I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor. No one's ever gonna keep me down again. Whoa, yes, I'm wise, but it's wisdom born of pain. Yes, I paid the price, but look how much I gained. If I have to, I can do anything. I am strong. It only serves to make me more determined to achieve my final goal.
And I Am Woman, the 70s feminist anthem by Helen Reddy, who died Tuesday at the age of 78. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. During last night's first presidential debate, Fox moderator Chris Wallace asked both candidates why voters should trust them to deal with the race issues facing this country over the next 4 years. This is what they answered.
It is true. The reason I got in the race is when those people, close your eyes, remember what those people look like coming out of the fields carrying torches, their veins bulging, spewing anti-Semitic bile and accompanied by the Ku Klux Klan. A young woman got killed, and they asked the president what he thought. He said there were very fine people on both sides. No president's ever said anything like that.
Second
point I'd make to you is that when Mr. Floyd was killed, there was a peaceful protest in front of the White House. What did he do? He came out of his bunker, had the military use tear gas on him so he could walk across to a church and hold up a Bible. And then what happened after that? The bishop of that very church said that it was a disgrace. The general who was with him said all he ever wants to do is divide people, not unite people at all. This is a president who has used everything as a dog whistle to try to generate racist hatred, racist division. This is a man who, in fact, you talk about helping African Americans. One in 1,000 African Americans has been killed because of the coronavirus. And if he doesn't do something quickly, by the end of the year, one in 500 will have been killed. One in 500 African Americans. This man is a savior of African Americans. This man cares at all. This man's done virtually nothing. Look, the fact is that you have to look at what he talks about. You have to look at what he did. And what he did has been disastrous for the African-American community.
So, President Trump, you have 2 minutes. Why should Americans trust you over your opponent to deal with racism?
He did a crime bill, 1994. Where you call them super predators, African Americans, super predators, and they've never forgotten it. They've never forgotten it, Joe.
No, sir. It's his 2 minutes.
So you did that, and they call you a super predator, and I'm letting people out of jail now that you have treated the African American population community, you have treated the black community about as bad as anybody in this country.
That's President Trump and Joe Biden sparring last night in Cleveland, perhaps the calmest moment of the evening when President Trump wasn't interrupting almost everything Joe Biden said. Fact checkers have noted Trump lied when he accused Biden of calling black Americans super predators. It was actually former First Lady Hillary Clinton who used that phrase in 1994, not Joe Biden. Still with us, Temple University Professor Mark Lamont Hill, and Kristen Clark is now joining us. She's the president and executive director of the National Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. Kristen, let's begin with you. Start off with your reaction to what they said here. We just were discussing President Trump refusing to condemn white supremacists when pushed on it several times, and on what he is saying here.
It was a deeply disturbing moment last night. In many respects, that question, will you condemn white supremacy, was a softball. It would have been very easy for President Trump to disavow white supremacy in crystal clear terms. You think about the tragedies that the American nation has lived through in recent time, the murder of 9 peaceful worshipers at the Baptist Church in Charleston, South Carolina, the murders of 11 worshipers at the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, the murders of over 20 people in El Paso, Texas, the murder of Heather Heyer in Charlottesville, Virginia. These horrendous incidents, all fueled by white supremacist violence, are easy for any reasonable-minded American to condemn, much less the leader of our country. And we know that the FBI director has identified white supremacy as one of the greatest threats that we face in our nation today. So I'm deeply disturbed. And I think about how history will reflect on this moment. And yesterday was a dark day for our country. I think about 1915 when Woodrow Wilson screened Birth of a Nation inside the White House. And over a century later, that is a moment that stands out for any ordinary American as a White House that embraced unnecessarily white supremacist rhetoric. And essentially, that's what we saw yesterday. We know that the Proud Boys are rejoicing today. We know that they have taken this moment to breathe life into their movement. They are boasting about how last night has helped to energize their base and help them to recruit new members. And so this is a moment that poses a real and grave threat to black and brown people, in particular in our country, who are often the victims of racial violence.
And Kristen Clark, this repeated emphasis of the president throughout the debate last night and obviously in statements previously about the dangers of the left and Antifa, and he kept referring to Portland at one point, claiming completely erroneously, a complete lie, that the sheriff of Portland had just that day endorsed him. But then Mike Reeves, who is the sheriff of the county in which Portland is, immediately tweeted out, "I have never supported Donald Trump and never will." And yet he brazenly claims that he had the support of the sheriff of Portland. This total distance. From the facts that often happens with the president and yet goes almost unchallenged. I'm wondering your sense of some of those claims that he's made.
Well, it's incredibly problematic. The misstatements, the lies, the Americans deserve truth. But I do want to talk a little bit about the situation that's happening on the ground in many cities across our country as communities continue to engage in protests and demonstrations against racial violence, against white supremacy, against police violence. And these are issues that we didn't hear President Trump speak to last night, speak to a solution or a cure for issues that are really tearing apart the fabric of our nation and issues that are front and center for the Black Lives Matter movement and for many people, multiracial and multigenerational, who are calling for healing in our country right now. You know, something else that this president has done he's promoted militarization of the police and really emboldened federal law enforcement to be used as a weapon against peaceful demonstrators. And it's created this toxic situation that we're seeing in many cities across the country right now. I think about Lafayette Square, just outside the shadow of the White House, where President Trump, alongside Attorney General Barr and other federal officials, ordered federal law enforcement to use violence at the hands of peaceful demonstrators who were assembled to make a statement about racial and police violence in our country. The ensuing chaos and brutal attack that was perpetrated resulted in harm to many people who we have brought a lawsuit on behalf of. That case, Black Lives Matter, D.C. versus Trump, is now pending in federal court. But I fear that unless we see change or intervention soon, that we are spiraling downward into a sea of further racialized violence in our country. And for my organization, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, we work closely with the victims of racial hate crimes. We work closely with the families of Emmett Till. We work closely with the families of James Byrd and the mother of Heather Heyer. They are reminders to us every day about the clear and present danger presented by ongoing white supremacy in our country right now. And all that President Trump did yesterday was fanned the flames of hatred in ways that really present a risk to our lives.
There is so much to talk about in last night's debate. Mark Lamont Hill, you had COVID, and I want to turn to the issue of health care and the pandemic. On Tuesday night, Joe Biden rejected accusations that he supported Medicare for All and acknowledged many people would not even be covered under his plan to create a government-sponsored public option. But as he tried to explain his plan, the debate descended into chaos.
The vast majority of the American people would still not be in that option, number one.
Joe, you agreed with Bernie Sanders, who's far left, on the manifesto,
manifesto.
And that gives you socialized medicine.
Look, hey, I'm not going to listen to him. The fact of the matter is, I beat Bernie Sanders.
Not by much.
I beat him a whole hell of a lot. I'm here standing facing
Pocahontas
you all, buddy.
Pocahontas would have left 2 days early. You would have lost every primary.
All he knows how to do
Super
is hurt.
Tuesday. You got
look,
very lucky.
Here's the deal. I got very lucky. I'm going to get very lucky tonight as well. And tonight I'm going to make sure because here's the deal.
Here's the deal. The fact is that everything he's saying so far is simply a lie. I'm not here to call out his lies. Everybody knows he's a liar.
But you
I just want to make sure.
Joe, you're the liar.
I want to make sure.
You graduated last in your class, not first in your class.
I want to make sure.
Mr. President, can you let him finish, sir?
He doesn't know how to do that. He has,
You'd be surprised.
The
go
wrong
ahead,
guy, the wrong go, night go. At the wrong time.
Listen, you agreed with
Here's
Bernie
the
Sanders to the manifesto.
The whole idea.
Let him.
There is no manifesto, number
Please
one.
Please let him speak, Mr. President.
Number two.
You just lost the left.
Number two.
You just lost the left. You agreed with Bernie Sanders on a plan.
Folks, do you have any idea what this clown's doing?
Socialized medicine.
Mr. President.
Well, I'll tell you what. He is not for any help for people needing health care. Because he, in fact, already has cost 10 million people their health care that they had from their employers because of his recession. Number one. Number two, there are 20 million people getting health care through Obamacare now that he wants to take it away. He won't ever look you in the eye and say that's what he wants to do.
During the debate, Joe Biden repeatedly criticized President Trump over his handling of the COVID-19 pandemic that's killed over 205,000 people in the United States, by far the highest death toll in the world.
Look, you folks at home, how many of you got up this morning and had an empty chair at the kitchen table because someone died of COVID? How many of you were in a situation where you lost your mom or dad and you couldn't even speak to them? You had a nurse holding a phone up so you could, in fact, say goodbye.
You would have lost far
how
more
many
people.
Far more people.
And you would have been
And by the way, your own,
you
his own CDC director says we could lose as many as another 200,000 people between now and the end of the year. And he held up. He said, if we just wear a mask, we can save half those numbers. Just a mask.
President Trump, you have begun to increasingly question the effectiveness of masks as a disease preventer. And in fact, recently you have cited the issue of waiters touching their masks and touching plates. Are you questioning
the efficacy of masks? You have to understand, if you look, I mean, I have a mask right here. I put a mask on, you know, when I think I need it. Tonight, as an example, everybody's had a test and you've had social distancing and all of the things that you have to. But
Just
I wear
like
masks when needed. When needed, I wear masks.
Okay, let me ask.
I don't wear masks like him. Every time you see him, he's got a mask. He could be speaking 200 feet away from it. He shows up with the biggest mask I've ever seen.
President Trump mocking Joe Biden for wearing a mask. Still with us, Temple University professor Mark Lamont Hill, author of the forthcoming book, We Still Hear, Pandemic, Policing, Protest, and Possibility. Mark, you had COVID. Respond to this discussion and what we've seen, President Trump's record, if you can talk about that, and what Joe Biden is recommending.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing to watch the president of the United States mocking someone for wearing a mask too much. It was almost like a high school bully. It was very bizarre. The idea of publicly representing the importance of the mask to me is a good idea, even if one were to overuse it, if that's even possible. To me, I'd rather err on the side of caution than not. But the idea of not erring on the side of caution is representative of the entire Trump administration's handling of the COVID-19 crisis. Trump didn't really defend himself against the fact that 200,000 people have died. Instead, he simply argued that more would have died under Joe Biden. He didn't address the fact that this was entirely preventable. He pats himself on the back for saying that he was able to stop people coming in from China, largely playing on xenophobia, but ignores the fact that he didn't block any sort of travel from Europe. And when we look at a place like New York City, the bulk of the people who had COVID right here where I am right now, the strains that they found were from Europe and other parts of North America. So again, he smuggles in his racism and his xenophobia into his handling of a public health crisis. The issue around masks isn't just about Trump's wearing of the mask. It's about the level of direction that came out of the White House regarding what we should do in a public health crisis. He lies on Fauci, essentially, by suggesting that Fauci was saying that we shouldn't wear masks when, in fact, Fauci was speaking to the scarcity of the mask. But the scarcity of the masks emerges because Donald Trump didn't follow the pandemic playbook that Obama left, which suggested that we need tens of millions of masks in storage, but in reserve. And yet Trump ignored that along with every other dimension of this. Trump could have aggressively stopped this. But again, once we found out that vulnerable people, economically vulnerable people, poor people and the elderly were the most vulnerable and the most the largest demographic of people dying from COVID-19. Suddenly, they were rendered disposable, and the Trump administration did very little. And as far as the public health part, or rather the healthcare part of this, this is an interesting moment. Trump decides, spends the entire debate painting Joe Biden, a neoliberal, as a radical socialist. And there are, I mean, at the same debate where Biden is defending police and saying he doesn't want to defund police and doesn't support the Green New Deal and doesn't support Medicare for all, he's still being painted as a socialist. Now, he's a much better alternative to Trump, and I'm certainly going to vote for him for that reason. But it's fascinating to watch Trump use this language. The truth here is that Trump has not engaged in any kind of plan or practice that will allow more Americans to be covered, that will allow more Americans to be saved. Yes, he signed an executive order to get us cheaper insulin, but that addresses 2% of the population of people who need insulin. So no, it's not coming into America like water. His attempts to address pre-existing conditions through an executive order do nothing to address what the ACA did. He has essentially undermined any chance at universal health care, any chance at protecting the American public, but especially the most vulnerable. Biden's plan isn't great. It's not perfect, but it's considerably better than Trump's. And that's what we have to deal with right now at this moment, is the reality that Trump has consigned us to death if we continue to follow his plan.
And of course, the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, goes before the Supreme Court on November 10th. Remains to be seen whether there will be a ninth justice, Amy Coney Barrett, who has criticized the Affordable Care Act. I want to turn, though, to President Trump and Joe Biden also sparring over mail-in voting during last night's debate.
The fact is that there are going to be millions of people because of COVID that are going to be voting by mail-in ballots, like he does, by the way. He sits behind the Resolute desk and sends his ballot to Florida, number one. Number two, we're going to make sure that those people who want to vote in person are able to vote because enough poll watchers are there to make sure they can socially distance, the polls are open on time, and the polls stay open until the votes are counted. And this is all about trying to dissuade people from voting because he's trying to scare people into thinking that it's not going to be legitimate. Show up and vote. You will determine the outcome of this election. Vote, vote, vote. If you're able to vote early in your state, vote early. If you're able to vote in person, vote in person. Vote whatever way is the best way for you, because you will. He cannot stop you from being able to determine the outcome of this election. And in terms of whether or not when the votes are counted and they're all counted, that will be accepted. If I win, that will be accepted. If I lose, that'll be accepted. But by the way, if in fact he says he's not sure what he's going to accept, well, let me tell you something. It doesn't matter, because if we get the votes, it's going to be all over. He's going to go. He can't stay in power. It won't happen. It won't happen. So vote. Just make sure you understand you have it in your control to determine what this country is going to look like the next 4 years. Is it going to change, or are you going to get 4 more years of these lies?
This is going to be a fraud like you've never seen. The other thing, it's nice on November 3rd, you're watching and you see who won the election. And I think we're going to do well because people are really happy with the job we've done. But you know what? We won't know. We might not know for months, because these ballots are going to be all over. Take a look at what happened in Manhattan. Take a look at what happened in New Jersey. Take a look at what happened in Virginia and other places. They're not losing 2%, 1%, which, by the way, is too much. An election could be won or lost with that. They're losing 30 and 40%. It's a fraud and it's a shame. And can you imagine where they say you have to have your ballot in by November 10th? November 10th, that means that's 7 days after the election, in theory, should have been announced.
Okay.
We have major states with that.
Sir,
all run by Democrats.
2 minutes is 2 minutes.
All run by Democrats. It's
President Trump.
It's a rigged election.
You're going to be able to continue. You have been charging for months that mail-in balloting is going to be a disaster. You say it's rigged, that it's going to lead to fraud. But in 2018, in the last midterm election, 31 million people voted mail-in voting. That was a quarter, more than a quarter, of all the voters that year cast their ballots by mail. Now that millions of mail-in ballots have gone out,
What are you going to do about it? And are you counting on the Supreme Court, including a Justice Barrett, to settle any dispute?
Yeah, I think I'm counting on them to look at the ballots, definitely. I don't think we'll, I hope we don't need them in terms of the election itself. But for the ballots, I think so.
Kristen Clark, this whole issue of the mail-in ballots and also of the president's calling on his supporters to watch the polls. You tweeted this was an attempt to promote intimidation and voter suppression. It is also unlawful. And you said we will go to court to block any attempt to deny, discourage, or deter people from freely casting their ballots. Talk about your sense of the president's attempt to intimidate voters.
Well, this is an old and familiar tactic. We saw the same thing from the president in 2018 when he tweeted ominously the night before the election that there will be people out watching and they're ready to prosecute. And, you know, they're thinly veiled efforts to intimidate voters, you know, and it's all about intimidating black and brown voters in particular. There's no mistake as to why he referred to Philadelphia. In particular, last night. And there are a few things. One, these repeated claims that mail voting is fraudulent are baseless and unsubstantiated. And that's backed even by his own FBI director, who said there is no evidence of any vote by mail fraud scheme in our country. Number two, we've got challenges with the U.S. Postal Service, a new postmaster general installed on his watch that has worked tooth and nail to slow down mail delivery. And we are in court battling Louis DeJoy right now to restore the status quo. Number three, there is a raging pandemic. There are some people who have no option. They cannot compromise their health or their safety to go out and vote in person this season. And so vote by mail is all that they can do. And number four, vote by mail is not new. There are five states in bipartisan fashion that have almost exclusively all vote by mail systems that have been in place for years. There are over a dozen and a half states where more than 50% of voters voted by mail in the last presidential election. And there's support for vote by mail from both Republicans and Democrats. My organization, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, is working tooth and nail to make sure that every eligible American can exercise their voice in our democracy. And we will not allow our efforts to be derailed by false claims of fraudulent voting or intimidation tactics that are aimed at the most vulnerable voters in our country.
Kristen Clark,
I wanted to ask you, though, isn't there a danger of not so much in terms of voter fraud, but in ballots being a higher percentage of ballots cast being rejected because of technical issues and how the voter filled out the mail-in ballot? How are you going to deal with this situation, which really requires people to be enough poll watchers from both parties to be at every place where ballots, mail-in ballots are being counted after the election, doesn't it?
And there's work happening before the election as well. Right now, we are suing states that are using signature matching verification rules, for example, as a pretext to reject ballots cast by eligible voters. We're mobilizing an army of over 20,000 lawyers in anticipation of some of the fight that may lie on the other side of November 3rd. And no doubt there are well-funded groups that are all about suppressing the vote that are bent on finding ways to disqualify mail-in ballots. But we are working hard to empower voters to make sure that they follow the steps necessary to cast a successful ballot. And we'll do everything that we can to beat back those who want to disenfranchise and silence voters who literally have no option in the middle of a pandemic but to vote by mail.
We're going to end with a clip from the debate. Joe Biden criticizing Trump for nominating Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court at a time when early voting has already begun in the presidential election. The moderator, Fox Chris Wallace, asked Biden what action he would take if elected.
So my question to you is, you have refused in the past to talk about it. Are you willing to tell the American people tonight whether or not you will support either ending the filibuster or packing the court?
Whatever position I take on that, that'll become the issue. The issue is the American people should speak. You should go out and vote. You're in voting now. Vote and let your senators know how strongly you feel. Vote now.
Are you going to pack the
court? Make sure you, in fact, let people know.
He doesn't want to answer the question.
I'm not going to answer the question.
Why would you answer that
question? Because the question is,
the radical left.
Will you shut up, man?
Listen, who is on your list, Joe?
This is so right.
Gentlemen, I think
we've ended this. This is so unprecedented.
He's going to pack the court.
We're
not going to give a list.
We have ended this segment. We're going to move on to the second segment.
That was really a productive segment, wasn't it? Keep yapping, man.
The people understand, Joe.
They
47 do. Years you've done nothing. They understand.
Oh. All right.
Shut up, man. T-shirts are already being printed. I want to thank Kristen Clark, Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, and Mark Lamont Hill of Temple University, forthcoming book, We Still Hear, Pandemic, Policing, Protest, and Possibility. Next up, we look at the climate. Stay with us.
You could do, I could do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Anything you can be, I can be greater. Sooner or later, I'm greater than you.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I can shoot a partridge with a single cartridge.
I can get a sparrow with a bow and arrow.
I can live on bread and cheese.
And only on that?
Yep.
So can a rat.
Any note you can sing, I can sing higher.
I can sing any note higher than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't. Sing that high.
I'm a girl.
Present Tom Wopat from Annie, Get Your Gun. This is Democracy Now!, the Quarantine Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We end today's show looking at the candidates' exchange about the climate crisis. Climate change was not on the six topics Fox News moderator Chris Wallace released before the debate, but he added the issue after a massive outcry from activists and young voters. This is Wallace questioning President Trump and Joe Biden.
The forest fires in the West are raging now. They have burned millions of acres. They have displaced hundreds of thousands of people. When state officials there blame the fires on climate change, Mr. President, you said, I don't think the science knows. Over your 4 years, you have pulled the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accord. You have rolled back a number of Obama environmental records. What do you believe about the science of climate change, and what will you do in the next 4 years to confront it?
I want crystal clean water and air. I want beautiful, clean air. We have now the lowest carbon. If you look at our numbers right now, we are doing phenomenally. But I haven't destroyed our businesses. Our businesses aren't put out of commission. If you look at the Paris Accord, it was a disaster from our standpoint. And people are actually very happy about what's going on because our businesses are doing well. As far as the fires are concerned, you need forest management in addition to everything else. The forest floors are loaded up with trees, dead trees that are years old, and they're like tinder, and leaves and everything else. You drop a cigarette in there, the whole forest burns down. You've got to have forest management.
What do you
You've
believe,
got to have cuts.
What do you believe about the science of climate change, sir?
I believe that we have to do everything we can to have immaculate air, immaculate water, and do whatever else we can that's good. You know, we're planting a billion trees, the Billion Tree Project, and it's very exciting.
You believe
for a lot
of people. That human pollution, greenhouse gas emissions contributes to the global warming of this planet?
I think
planet?
A lot of things do, but I think to an extent, yes.
So look how much we're paying now to deal with the hurricanes. By the way, he has an answer for hurricanes. He said maybe we should drop a nuclear weapon on them.
I never said that.
That's
at all.
What he did say.
You made it up.
And here's the deal.
You make up a
We are going to be in a position where we can create hard, good jobs by making sure the environment is clean and we all are in better shape. We spend billions of dollars now, billions of dollars on floods, hurricanes, rising seas. We're in real trouble. Look what's happened just in the Midwest with these storms that come through and wipe out entire sections and counties in Iowa. They didn't happen before. They're because of global warming. The Green New Deal will pay for itself as we move forward. We're not going to build plants that, in fact, are great polluting plants.
But do you support the Green New Deal?
Pardon me?
Do you support
that? No, I don't support the Green New Deal.
Oh, you don't? Oh, well, that's a big statement.
I support
that means you just lost the radical left.
I support the Biden plan that I put forward.
Okay.
The Biden plan, which is different than what he calls the radical Green New Deal.
All right.
That's the first presidential debate last night. For more, we're joined by Kate Aronoff, staff writer at The New Republic. She is the co-author of A Planet to Win, Why We Need a Green New Deal. So here's Trump trying to talk about Biden as a socialist throughout the night. And then there is Biden saying that he does not support a Green New Deal, and Wallace pressing Trump on whether humans cause climate change and whether this is a crisis. Kate, your overall response.
Well, I was pleasantly surprised to even have climate change come up last night. I wasn't supposed to, and I think it's a credit to people who rightfully raised a stink about that. And I also wasn't surprised at all about what both candidates said, right? We've known for years that Donald Trump denies the science of climate change, that he thinks it's a hoax, that, you know, he's loyal to people in the fossil fuel industry, to executives in the fossil fuel industry in particular. And we've known that Joe Biden doesn't support a Green New Deal. This isn't new news. I think that's what's also not surprising is that there's a clear choice between these two candidates, right? We can't have another Donald Trump administration and hope to tackle the climate crisis on the speed and scale that we need. And we know that Joe Biden is going to need to be pushed into tackling the climate crisis at the speed and the scale that we need. So I you know, follow these issues. I didn't learn a whole lot last night. I was glad it came up, but I think there's a lot of work to do, regardless of who's elected in January. And I certainly hope that Joe Biden is elected in November.
And Kate Aronoff, while I agree with you that it was great for Chris Wallace to raise climate change issues in the debate, one thing that did happen as a result of that, because he questioned Donald Trump four or five times straight at one point on the climate, is that it didn't allow time for closing arguments by either candidate. This being perhaps maybe the biggest debate audience. Who knows? We haven't seen the final results yet, but the chance that both candidates, Biden and Trump, lost to be able to make a closing argument. Do you think that something was lost in that?
Well, judging by the other hour and a half of the debate, I'm not sure we would have gotten too much of that out of that either way. I mean, it was a mess. I mean, to put it really charitably, what happened last night. And so that would have been nice, but I also think it's good to, you know, talk about the greatest existential threat humanity has ever faced when you're looking at two potential leaders in the free world.
Kate Aronoff, 20 seconds on Biden's Green New Deal, or what he's saying is the Biden deal.
Yeah, it's the most progressive climate policy that a Democratic presidential candidate has ever run on, and it's not nearly enough. Activists push this to be the best plan that we've seen from a Democratic nominee. And we know that in January, when he is hopefully elected, that he'll need to be pushed really aggressively in order to make any of that a reality. So it's a good starting place. And it's just that.
Well, we want to thank you for being on with us, Kate Aronoff, staff writer at The New Republic. This is supposedly the first of three presidential debates. Next week, it's the vice presidential debate. We end today's show with Fox's Chris Wallace questioning President Trump about his tax returns.
Mr. President, as you well know, there's a new report that in 2016, the year you were elected president, and 2017, your first year as president, that you paid $750 a year in federal income tax each of those years. I know that you pay a lot of other taxes, but I'm asking you the specific question. Is it true that you paid $750 in federal income taxes each of those 2 years?
I paid millions of dollars in taxes, millions of dollars of income tax. And let me just tell you, there was a story in one of the papers.
I paid
$38 million 1 year. I paid $27 million 1 year.
Show us your tax returns.
I went
You'll see it as soon as it's finished. You'll see it.
But Vice President Biden, you want to respond?
Yeah, I do want to respond. Look, the tax code that made him, put him in a position that he pays less tax than a school teacher makes, on the money a school teacher makes, is because of him he says he's smart because he can take advantage of the tax code. And he does take advantage of the tax code. That's why I'm going to eliminate the Trump tax cuts. And I'm going to eliminate those tax cuts and make sure that we invest in the people who, in fact, need the help. People out there need help.
But why didn't you do it over the last 25 years?
Because you weren't president. Because you weren't president screwing things up.
You were a senator.
You're the worst president America has ever had.
Hey, Joe, let me just tell you, Joe. I've done more in 47 months. I've done more than you've done in 47 years.
Just have 20 seconds, Kate Aronoff, your final response.
Like most of the 1%, Donald Trump lives by a different set of rules. Most working people pay more taxes than Donald Trump has paid in the last 15 years. The Times reporting is very clear, and we need to get him out of office. That's it. I mean, we need a much better tax code, and we need to tax the rich much more than they are now.
Kate Aronoff of the New Republic, thanks so much for being with us. And if you'd like to see the whole debate, 90 minutes of the free-for-all, you can go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Special thanks to Julie Crosby. Stay safe. Wear a mask.